The Borderland continues to be fertile ground for making movies, and it seems each year there are more films and filmmakers emerging from our region. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. One of the goals of this program is to occasionally profile the work of a local filmmaker, and it's my pleasure to have on the program, for the first time, Andrew Hadda, a writer, director of several feature films, either out now or coming soon. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am great. It is so great to see you. It's been, I think we were talking about before the show, 8 or 9 years, I think, at the Plaza Classic Film Festival, where I programmed one of your films many years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time since then.
And speaking of that film many years ago, when I saw the listing for your latest film, The Last Ones, which just came out on Amazon streaming, I read the description and I thought, boy, that sounds awfully familiar. And it's the film that we talked about 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, and it's the first film I've ever done, so we're excited to have it released.
Now, that film was called The Last Days?
It was called Just Last Days.
Last Days, yeah. And now you're calling it The Last Ones.
Yes.
But you've made some changes. This is not the film I saw 8 years ago.
No, we went back and, you know, with experience and time, we've noticed some problems. So we went through and we re-edited it. We made it tighter and a little bit, let it flow a little bit better. We put it in black and white to kind of help.
That's the biggest change.
Yeah, explain the tone, because it's a zombie movie, but it's a lot somber. It's a somber movie. It's more like a Western. And a lot of times when people would see it when we're in festivals, you kind of expect, you know, zombies running through, and we wanted to kind of explain that it's a little bit more somber, and the black and white helps us to, like, show that tone.
A little more Night of the Living Dead, where it's more about the living and what they're going through than what's outside.
Yeah, exactly. It's more about the survivors and how they deal with. One of the main things I always wanted to do was the idea that, you know, in a lot of these zombie movies, it's a group of people who meet for the first time after the apocalypse, and they always, like, work together to stop something, but... You know, if you're meeting three random people you've never met before, what are the chances that they're all going to have your best interests and their best interests, and they're going to line up in the same way? So we wanted to kind of deal with that. And what if it's not? What if one of their interests is against yours? You know, so we wanted to do that.
Clearly, you're a student of the genre. I remember 8 years ago when I saw the original version, thinking, you know, here's a filmmaker who's studied some precedent for this film, because it is all about that dynamic of the living there. And that's what drives a lot of those early, particularly early zombie films, is the collection of survivors that come together, sometimes not so perfectly.
Right. And the scariest thing to me about zombies has always been the paranoia and the, you know, fear that your neighbors could be the ones who are the monsters, you know, and it's kind of been lost a little bit as, you know, zombie movies are able to branch out into bigger budget things, but we're able to bring it back to that idea of your neighbor is your enemy.
There was a film last year I was watching that immediately came to mind when I saw your black and white footage, and that was It Comes at Night, which is a film about paranoia and claustrophobia, and these survivors hold up, and you're not quite sure what's outside the house, but they're really afraid of what's out there. And through their fear, it just drives the story. The decision to go to black and white, tell me about that, because it's amazing the difference it makes. I haven't seen the whole film. I remember 8 years ago the film in general, but seeing it in black and white, it seemed like it's what it needed.
Right. And I think putting it in black and white, the decision was we did another film, and I always try to put movies in black and white. I just like black and white. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work because the other film is more of a midnight kind of fun movie, almost like Shaft or Coffee, like those kind of midnight grindhouses. Mm-hmm. And so black and white completely ruins the tone of that. And as we were doing it, I was like, you know what does have a more, you know, quieter kind of somber tone? Because black and white forces you to really watch it, because it, you know, everything gets kind of almost bled together with the black and the white, especially at night. So I was like, Last Days does have that kind of tone. So we tried it out. I put the original trailer that we had in black and white, and it worked so well that I went back and we put everything in. And it just, you know, it kind of, not only does it make it stand out because there's not that many black and white films anymore, but it also just helps elevate the story, which is, you know, every trick you can do.
Well, the scenes I looked at, it's certainly more atmospheric than I remember the original film being. Which, so again, the black and white has contributed to that immensely. The fact that this just rolled out yesterday on Amazon so that people can rent or purchase via Amazon streaming service is really big. There's not many feature films being made in the border that get to Amazon. I'm just wondering what that process was like.
You know, and it involves you have to, you know, turn it in and you have to get it approved, and then you have to turn in, once you get it approved, which is, it takes a little bit, but then you turn in your artwork and you have to get closed captioning, which is, you know, you have to get a service to do that. Or you can do it yourself, but it's a long process. And then you have to upload it, and then they have to approve the artwork, because you can't just turn in any artwork. It has to be very specific, and they even want like title placement and everything. Mm. And then you
meet
wait.
A bunch of technical requirements.
Yeah, just technical.
Huh. So do you recommend this to others listening who are filmmakers? Because it's most of the filmmakers I know, they have their feature films done and then they do the festival circuit and then that's about it. If they don't get distribution in Amazon, it seems like it's a great way to, in effect, self-publish your work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that there is that kind of, if you go to festivals and you don't get distribution, there's that kind of, you feel a little bit defeated. And mm-hmm. to me, it's not 100% art until other people have seen it. Like, right. I can look at the painting all day, but once other people can comment on it, that's when it becomes. And that was behind our main factor of putting it on Amazon. And yeah, I would recommend it to anyone who's making their own stuff, because, you know, you want people to see it. And there is, you know, there's value, and there could be value that you don't even know in movies. We've had people comment on, you know, we've had a few reviews that we've seen, and they comment on stuff that I don't really like, that I didn't see originally. And we've had a bunch of people say that it seems like it comes at night, which I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. So
you were 8 years ahead of yeah, it comes exactly. at night.
So it comes at night copying me is the problem.
That's right. That's right. You need to make that clear. So that's an interesting feedback loop, though. Now that you're on Amazon, one of the biggest platforms for viewing movies on the planet, and also a platform for people to leave comments. How is that as a director and writer to start getting some of these unsolicited comments about your film?
Well, it's interesting. We haven't gotten too many negative comments, especially like on the trailer and stuff, but you do get that, you know, that stone in your stomach before you open anything and when it tells you you have a new comment, a new review. But I think, again, overall, it's, you want to see, especially with, you know, we make independent films because we're making almost polarizing movies that this big studios, or at least hopefully that the big studios won't necessarily do. So you do want that. You don't want, the worst thing I think you can do is make an independent film that you think is challenging and then everyone says it's okay. You know, mm-hmm. you want that it's great or I hate it because.
Yeah, not in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
So people can stream this today, beginning today. What is the rental fee on Amazon for the last ones?
It's $2.99 to rent, and you get it for 48 hours.
Great. Hopefully you'll see a bunch of hits over the weekend yeah. on that. And I know you're having to self-market that, so we're happy to talk to you about this. But this is just one of several film projects you've got going. You've already got another film. Tell us about Borderland, a feature film that is finished and is starting to roll out.
Cool. Yeah, Borderland, we shot it last, and I think 2 Octobers ago, and it, you know, it took a little while to get to edit and sound design and everything. But it's, you know, we wanted to, it was a movie I mentioned earlier. It's a little bit of a midnight kind of grindhouse movie. And we just wanted to have fun. And originally,
crime based.
Yeah. It's about the cartels, and a woman has a debt to the cartels. And she has to drive around one of their hitmen around town to kind of find some missing money.
Like a chauffeur.
Yeah. A little bit. And, because of that, you know, we use it as a launching point to talk about, we have a scene talking about Chico's Tacos, we have a scene talking about the Mexican grandma's houses, and we just wanted to have a lot of fun. It was originally a horror film, but as I was writing it was just getting really depressing. So I was like, you know what, I want to try it. And while I was driving around looking for locations, I thought of the idea, like, what if instead of, you know, all the characters are in one space looking for the money, they're driving around looking for the money. We really get a sense of these characters. And it's like I said, it's a girl and a hitman, and you get that kind of back and forth, and they get to relate to each other. So it was a fun movie.
So Borderland has hit the festival circuit. I know you have some submissions out and are waiting for some festivals to pick it up. But you're already in pre-production, I guess, for another feature film. Tell me about Empty Space.
Yes, that film is it's my biggest, most ambitious movie that we've done. And it's about a girl who she's gone through a traumatic experience and she's suffering from anxiety and panic attacks. And she's starting to see something. And and then her boyfriend died in a violent attack that gave her the panic attacks. And he comes back and she doesn't know exactly what happened.
So it's a supernatural film.
It is. It's kind of, you don't give too much away. Well, we related to Black Swan, where we don't ever want the audience to know.
Keep them guessing.
Yeah, what's in her head.
And Empty Space. So you're really into genre filmmaking. You've got a horror film, a crime film, a supernatural film. I mean, where did all this start? As a kid, did you always want to make movies?
I think as a kid, I always loved movies. You know, I remember when I was 5 years old.
It's a good place to start, loving movies before you make them.
Yeah. I remember being 5 years old and it was my birthday party and everyone was playing on a bouncy house and I was watching Star Wars, the first one. And it wasn't even like a particular, like it wasn't the first time watching Star Wars. It was just Star Wars was on, so I wanted to watch it. And, you know, it kind of grew from that. And I think as I grew as a person and, you know, went into film school, I realized that with genre film, you can touch stuff that people normally won't get on topics. Mm-hmm. Like like my example is First Blood. First Blood is an action movie. It stars Sylvester Stallone, but it also was one of the first movies that dealt with the Vietnam PTSD.
Yeah.
And, you know, not
it's
many
It's actually
people...
a really good movie.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And you know, it's kind of sullied by its sequels, but the first movie, you kind of get that impression. And with Empty Spaces, we wanted to do the same thing. I suffer from anxiety, and I wanted to talk about that. And I feel in this movie, you kind of get to do that without people even realizing what you're doing. And
isn't that the first rule of screenwriting is write what you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's a lot of you in all of these characters.
Oh,
it sounds like.
It's all just me, really.
You have a favorite director?
Living or?
Doesn't matter.
I think living, it would probably be David Fincher, just the way he touches.
I see a little John Carpenter in your films, too.
Oh, yes. And John Carpenter has always been the biggest inspiration. Just the way what he does with genre is pretty amazing.
Well, fantastic. It's always great to catch up with people I haven't seen in many years. And I'm so happy to hear that you're continuing to work and make films. And I look forward to the next two, Borderland and Empty Space.
Yes.
Good luck with those.
Oh, thank you.
My guest today has been local filmmaker Andrew Hotta, whose feature film The Last Ones just hit Amazon streaming service for rent or purchase. He also has two upcoming films, the crime drama Borderland and the supernatural thriller Empty Space. You can see teasers for these films at YouTube and Vimeo. Just put those titles into the search engine. A final program note, the Sunset Film Society presents the 2011 film The Artist today at 2 p.m. at the International Museum of Art. The film about a silent film star and his difficult transition into sound pictures brilliantly evokes an earlier age of cinema and won the Best Picture Oscar in 2012. Admission is free. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.